From the AMFM 24/7 radio network, ClearPoint Financial Solutions presents the Small Business Administration award-winning School for Startups Radio, where we talk all things small business and entrepreneurship. Now, here's your host, the guy that believes that anyone can be an entrepreneur, because entrepreneurship is not about creativity, risk, or passion, Jim Beach.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of School for Startups Radio, where we believe anyone, yes, anyone, even you, can be a successful entrepreneur. We don't really care about creativity. We think it's cool when you got it, but if you don't got it, we teach you how to fake it. Go out there and find a business to copy, borrow, or steal. I say that a little facetiously. We're not going to do anything illegal or immoral. But certainly, if we read a magazine article about someone in Seattle, we're going to do that in Atlanta. If we find out someone's got a really cool business in San Diego, we're willing to do it in Las Vegas. That is cool. There is nothing wrong with taking someone else's idea and improving upon it, executing it better, and going out there and making yourself a fortune. Remember, 93% of businesses around the world are copies of someone else's business. Go out there and find an idea if you don't have one. It is not cool to be sitting on the sofa waiting for a lightning bolt from God of creativity and not being an entrepreneur. We're in the new year now. You need to go get out there and start a business. And we're not going to wait on creativity to do that. We're also not going to take a bunch of risk. Risk is officially bad, right? Successful serial entrepreneurs reduce risk. They hate risk. They don't take risk. And that is certainly something that we are just obsessed with here. Risk is bad and passion is not necessary. We reserve passion for the church, the synagogue, the mosque, and occasionally the bedroom. Passion is great, but you don't wait on it, right? If you're not passionate about a business model, and I can totally understand that, be passionate about the process, the lifestyle, the freedom that comes with being an entrepreneur. That is enough. It is enough to simply love the fact that you don't work for the man. That gives you enough passion to get up early and play this game, I promise you. And so that is what we are all about here at School for Startups Radio. I got a great show for you today. Sue B. Zimmerman is with us. She is a social media expert, and today we're going to be talking about Instagram. She's got some great stuff to teach us. And Craig Cody is with us. He is ex-police from New York City, I believe, and now he is a financial guru and is going to show us the things that our CPAs won't tell us, these financial tricks and techniques that are used to make and save money. It's some great information. He's got a really cool book out, and we will look forward to talking with Craig Cody. I want to remind you about the blog posting that I put up on my LinkedIn profile the other day about entrepreneurs that demand to own 51%. I've, in the last 2 years, run across two entrepreneurs. I was trying to help two entrepreneurs that demanded 51% ownership in the venture, and they both turned out horribly, and I'm seeing a pattern here. If you demand 51%, it means you are insecure. It's not because you're trying to be safe and smart and protect yourself. Because you're insecure, you can control a business with 10, 20% of it. You don't have to own 51%. It means you don't think that in the end people are going to side with you. I think people are going to side with me because I'm going to convince them that I'm right. And so I'm willing to own 20%. That's cool with me. It also means you're not a team player. It means that you're a tyrant, that you are going to boss people around. These 51% demanders are the people in the end that demand you do what they say. They are tyrants. They should be Middle Eastern dictators. I'm serious. These people are crazy. They have huge personality flaws. And, you know, of course, this is not 100% steadfast rule. There will be people that own 51% that are not just absolutely nut jobs. I haven't found them. I'm just telling you, these people are crazy, and they think that they have to be in control because they are inherently weak people. And so do not fall for this trap. And if you think you have to own 51% of your business to do it, think hard about what you are saying about yourself. and read my blog post. It's over there on LinkedIn. I want to make sure that everyone knows about it. Oh, and never buy an Epson printer. They just run through ink like crazy. I printed 7 pages and ran out of ink the other day after refilling with ink. I hate Epson printers and no technical support. Anyway, I am done ranting and I will be right back.
If you are enjoying the show and would like to learn more about Jim's philosophy of low-risk entrepreneurship, please check out the School for Startups book on Amazon. Over 50 reviews have given the book 5 stars. It argues that anyone can be an entrepreneur when you learn a new way to think about creativity, risk, and passion. Full of stories of low-risk entrepreneurs, School for Startups is a great read.
Well, that's a wonderful question, actually, Jim.
Oh my gosh, I love the opportunity to do this. Thank you, Jim.
Wow, that's a great one.
You know, that is a phenomenal question.
That's a great question, and I don't have a great answer.
That's a great question.
Oh, that is such a loaded question,
and that's actually a really good question.
School for Startups Radio.
And welcome back to School for Startups Radio again. Thank you so much for being with us today. I am very excited to introduce you to my first guest. Her name is Sue B. Zimmerman. She is the number one Instagram expert out there. She is founder of Instra Results, which is the world's first comprehensive online Instagram course, and Ready, Set, Graham, a beginner Instagram course, and she is the author of the number one ebook, Instagram Basics for Your Business. She is a top creative live instructor, powerful speaker on all sorts of stages, including Social Media Marketing World 2015, and a highly sought after business coach. She is very passionate about teaching entrepreneurs, executives, and marketing professionals how to easily leverage the power of Instagram. And this is certainly something that I need. She is a serial entrepreneur, and Sue B has started over, listen to this, 18 businesses, including her own boutique, Sue B Do, Boxer Rebellion, and Sue B Zimmerman Enterprises. Sue B, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm great. Thanks so much for having me here.
Well, I am excited to talk to you and to learn from you. This is going to be fantastic. How did you personally discover Instagram? What was the first thing that got you started on that platform?
My twin teenage daughters, I pay attention to all of their mobile habits, and to all the listeners out there, make sure that you know what your teenagers are doing, because most likely they are setting the next mobile trend. And my daughters, Lila and Kira, were no exception. I saw that they were on their phone scrolling, literally scrolling all day. And I was really curious what they were doing, because at the time I was teaching social media in and around the Boston area. And I also had, as you mentioned in the intro, have a store on the Cape called Sooby-Doo, and I'm always looking for ways to market and bring more traffic into that store. So when they told me that they were on Instagram and I had no idea what it was, I knew I needed to dive in deep, understand the platform, and start using it for my small business. So my journey began about 3 years ago on Instagram, and after having huge success and really growing my store revenue 40% in one summer, I realized that I needed to teach other business owners all over the world how to have the same success. And I started speaking, as you said, on stages such as Social Media Marketing World and Social Media Camp in Canada and many, many other stages around in very niche-specific industries, teaching industries how to have great success using Instagram as a visual platform to broadcast their messages.
And you said you were teaching social media before you discovered this. Were you a Twitter junkie before, a Facebook junkie? What platforms did you find the most useful and that you were using before Instagram?
I was was actually teaching Pinterest and using that pretty consistently. I am very versed and very active on Twitter, and all of my handles are consistent at Suby Zimmerman. I also am a huge fan of Facebook and Facebook ads. And, I'm on SlideShare. I am very active on Periscope. I scope every day teaching Instagram tips. And I'm really active on live stream. But those are two new ones. But before learning Instagram, I would say that Periscope, Facebook, and Twitter were the sandboxes that I played in most frequently.
All right. You mentioned Pinterest. I kind of wonder if Pinterest is dying. For example, some of the automation suites like Hootsuite don't even go to Pinterest. Clout doesn't give you any credit for being on Pinterest. Would you say that that's a dying platform? Are you still using it actively?
I do not think it's a dying platform. I do not care or endorse any kind of clout factor. I don't even pay attention to that. So I don't think that that's really relevant. I think what's relevant is what worked for your business, your platform. Pinterest is absolutely a place where you can grow your business and convert to sales. And there's amazing strategies and experts that teach you how to do that. And I've been around a lot of them and have had them as part of my teachings. Specifically, you mentioned in the intro that I was an instructor on Creative Live. My last course, Suby Get Social, I had Jeff C. from Manly Pinterest talk about Pinterest and the value of Pinterest. And I don't know if you know this, but now you can basically search any image on Pinterest from just looking at a digital camera, a digital image. So if, for example, in a photo, there's a lamp that you want to buy, you can click on that lamp and it will pull up all the other lamps with those pins that you might want to purchase that might be either similar to the one that you're looking at or the same. So Pinterest is absolutely a very, very powerful but different tool than Instagram. I do not go on Pinterest anymore because I don't need to. I know that I can get the kind of success that we're looking for in our business just from focusing on Instagram. And I really want the listeners to understand that there are so many platforms out there, visual platforms, and that it's really important to be versed in one or two than to spread yourself too thin. I, as a passionate entrepreneur, am a visual thinker, and I can easily consume and process and learn and implement many social platforms, and that works for me and my business. But I think one of the biggest problems that business owners, small business owners, entrepreneurs have is the ability to have the time to focus and do it right. And people are spreading themselves too thin. So I want to really just hit home with the like focus on what's best for you.
All right. Well, I certainly agree with everything you said, especially about focusing and being too thin. When you say that, they should focus on what's, working for them. How long should they spend? Say they hear this interview and they say, well, I have a visual product as well. I'm selling blue jeans. How long should they give it on a new platform before they decide whether that platform is working or not? Is 6 months too long, too short?
It's not a matter of how much time. It's a matter of how their strategy is presented and how much they understand what's native to that platform. So I know people that have had huge success right out of the gate on Instagram. And then I know people that it took them 3 years to get it and now they're crushing it. So there's not a right answer to that question in my mind. It's more, what is your visual strategy? How are you setting yourself apart from everyone else that's doing what you do and giving value and growing a community and building trust?
All right. Let's say we are just now starting an Instagram account. We've made a commitment to do that. What are some of the basics that we need to do to start doing it well and, as you said, crush it?
Yeah, you need to have a bio. I mean, there's about six things I can tell you that you need to do to set yourself up for success. So The first one is having a bio that represents who you are, what your brand is, in a very simple, straightforward way, and not confusing people. So if you're here for business, it's all business. We don't want to know about all your hobbies and your family members. It's really focused on the market that you're trying to serve. It's having a very strong avatar. It's having call to action. It's having a custom link in your bio so you can actually track your success and know what kind of conversion rate you're having. For example, I have 6 different Instagram accounts that all serve a different purpose, and we have custom UTMs, custom bit.ly links on each one of them so that we can track the success of our Instagram marketing efforts, which converts to about 200 new emails every week. So for us, having opt-ins, having emails is the gold in our business, and that's the conversion that we like to see. And so that's success. And so having a great bio is number one. Having a hashtag strategy that attracts your ideal customer or client and understanding what those hashtags would be, knowing where your customer hangs out, knowing what your customer's interests are, and using relevant hashtags. So number two is understanding how to do that strategically. And on our website, we do have a book called Get Your Hashtag On that you can link to the show notes that is $39, where we talk about 35 different industries and what the relevant hashtags are based on our research, not based on what you just Google to find. So that might be a good resource for your listeners. The third strategy is having a geotag strategy. When you use geotags on Instagram, you get 79% more engagement, especially if you are a location-based business. And even if you're not, and even if you're somebody that works from home, for example, I live in Wellesley, Massachusetts, I could geotag Wellesley, I could geotag Boston, I could geotag Cape Cod because I live there in the summer. When you geotag on Instagram, you're also part of that geotag hub, as you know, you can be part of a hashtag hub. So having a geotag strategy would be the third thing to focus on. The fourth thing is using direct messaging. A lot of people don't even know that direct messaging on Instagram can be part of your strategy. It's been around since 2013. Instagram recently updated it. It's absolutely an amazing place where you can do some great one-on-one communication, or you can communicate up to 15 people at a time. So making sure that you utilize the direct message feature is another strategy to keep in mind. And the one strategy that people just don't get right is having a posting strategy that matches up to your brand. So if you're a podcaster, or if you interview people for your business, just putting a picture of that person that you're interviewing on Instagram is not going to get the likes and engagement, because not everybody all over the world knows who that person is. You need to create content on Instagram that is visually appealing to a global audience, that gives value not only in the photo but in the description below, and really has an entertainment factor, if you will. Does all this make sense, Tim?
Yes, you're giving me so much information. I'm taking notes here. I want to go back through some of these and get a little bit more, but this is just fantastic, Subi.
So good. Okay, what do you need?
Let's go back to geo first, the geo tag strategy. I've never used this at all, so I don't even know what you're referring to. Is this a hashtag with the location? Is it, you know, hashtag Wellesley? And I used to date a Wellesley girl there, so you're bringing back all sorts of memories for me. But anyway, is it just as simple as a hashtag and then the location?
No, it sounds like you need my Ready, Set, Gram course, Jim.
I'm sure I do.
It is a location that you turn on Instagram. Your location, when you turn your location service on Instagram, you can geotag any location. It has nothing to do with a hashtag.
Okay, so it's one of the things I need to do when I create my account and edit my profile.
No.
Okay, well, where is this then on the site?
When you upload a photo in the app, you have the ability to geotag it when you post it.
Okay. See, that's one of my problems. I've never posted on Instagram without going through Hootsuite or one of the automation packages. That just kills you, doesn't it, Sue B?
Oh, yeah. Instagram is meant for mobile. It's not meant for desktop. So if you're not using it on mobile, it sounds like it's not the right platform for you. You've got to know how to use it right from your phone. Engagement is really great to do on desktop, and there's a lot of different places that you can do that engagement, like Iconosquare or Square Loving, and you can engage and use it that way. But Instagram is meant for mobile, and you need to understand how to use mobile. If you want to do it from the desktop, you can use LaterGram to do it.
Okay. LaterGram, LaterGram?
Uh-huh.
And does that post to Instagram, or does that a whole different platform?
It posts to Instagram, but you need to. There's a push notification that you get on your phone once you schedule it, so that you post it directly from your phone.
Okay, that's what I do with Hootsuite. That's the exact same integration that Hootsuite has.
Yeah, it's similar to what you can do on Hootsuite. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
You should definitely link up LaterGram, and it's GRAMME. There's two M's.
Okay. Great. And you said that something that has a geotag gets 70%. Is that the number I heard? Better response?
I think I said 79%. Let me just check that so I give you the right quote. Give me 1 second. I posted information about this on the Instagram expert. Yeah, 79% more engagement when you add the location.
Okay. And is it the location? For you, obviously, it's going to be somewhere around Boston. If I'm interviewing someone from Silicon Valley, or I'm posting something that I saw in Detroit on my vacation, can I add multiple things like Atlanta and Detroit, or is that verboten?
No. That's for hashtags only. This is the geotag, and I can use geotags from any. I just posted a geotag from San Francisco when I uploaded my photo when I was on stage at Creative Live, because where that photo was taken was in San Francisco.
Okay. Makes sense. All right. Posting strategy. You mentioned that entertainment is absolutely so critical. Talk to us about, you know, what do you mean by entertain me? Is it silly quotes? Is it pictures of you at a conference? How do we make a picture of someone at a conference entertaining?
It's not just entertainment. It's education, entertaining, inspiring. Any emotion that you can elicit will get engagement, and it has to be part of your core message. Your core message with your brand. It's not just throw up a photo and entertain somebody. Does this make sense for my account, for the people that I attract that like my core values for my business, my core values as a person? It all has to make sense. It all has to be on point with your branding. So one of my accounts, the Instagram expert, I'm constantly giving value and giving Instagram tips every single time I post. And so those tips are visually shown from other people's accounts where I use them as an example, or from my own content that I have. And sometimes you'll see inspirational quotes. For example, one of my favorites is, the more you shine the light on others, the more the light shines on you. People like reading inspirational quotes, no matter what platform they're on. You can get a lot of engagement. So you just need to decide what kind of posting strategy you're going to have that makes sense for your business.
How many times a day is correct? Is there
There's no correct. It's not right or wrong here. It's again back to what is your audience responding to. On my personal account, I post one sometimes up to three times a day. On the Instagram Expert, I just post once because I get a lot of engagement. I get 100 new followers every day on both of these accounts, so I know that I'm attracting my ideal client.
Okay. Same rules. For example, on Twitter, there's the follow back strategy, right? What is the polite thing to do on Instagram? Do you follow back everyone that follows you?
And I don't agree with what you just said about the follow rule back on Twitter. I don't follow anybody unless they give me value. I will give them love. I will favorite their tweet on Instagram. I will give them comments and I will double tap their posts. But I don't follow just because they followed me. There's no rule. It's what makes the most sense for you and your business.
Okay. You remember you said you had a big success with your store on Cape Cod, right? What were you doing that helped the business so much? Were you posting pictures of items in the store? What is a good Instagram campaign look like for a particular product or a visual item like a store?
Well, first and foremost, I empowered people. I empowered the 7 girls that work for me. And they were part of my posting strategy. So I say empower the people and tell them what you expect them to do on your behalf. And because all my employees are teenage girls, they were versed on Instagram. They had a following. And when they posted pictures of the products that we were selling, all of their friends came into the door at my store and wanted to buy my anchor bracelets, my starfish necklaces, my beach bags. And it was really the collective effort of all of us that attributed to that increase, that 40% increase.
Okay. And so there was really no, what we would quote unquote say, product placement in the post then, or is that incorrect also?
That's incorrect also, yes. They were different strategies. Sometimes I would show my happy customers holding my product. Sometimes I'd have the kids displaying the product. Sometimes it would just be a product shot. You never want to sell on Instagram. You always want to give value, give an emotional feeling, an emotional attachment. It's not about making the sale. It's about building a relationship, building trust, building a community. And then when you're ready to sell something, people will buy it because they know you, they like you, and they trust you.
All right. Fantastic advice, Sue B. Zimmerman. How can we find you on social media? How can we get the video classes and all of those sort of things, please?
Yeah, so the best place to go is my website, SueBZimmerman.com. It's where I will give all of your listeners a free download of my Instagram strategy guide for 2016. You want to grab it. A lot of people say that they would have paid for it. It's that good. I am Sue B. Zimmerman everywhere on Snapchat, on Periscope, on Blab, on Instagram, on Facebook. And the other call to action I want to give is to make sure everyone comes over to my Facebook page, Sue B. Zimmerman Enterprise, and like that page because every day we post an article that will help you with your Instagram marketing strategy and your business.
Fantastic. Sue B., thank you so much for being with us, and I hope you have a fantastic 2016.
Thanks so much.
And we will be right back.
School for Startups Radio hopes that you will reach out to us if you need help with your business at any stage from concept to exit. Our online learning center at schoolforstartups.com has 80 hours of videos to help with every topic. Jim accepts all connections on LinkedIn, he tweets from @entrepreneurjim, and he responds to emails to james.beach@att.net. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the show.
For over 50 years, ClearPoint Credit Counseling Solutions has been helping families budget better, pay down debt, and restore financial stability. If you are having problems making ends meet, are behind on paying bills, or just need another perspective on how to manage expenses, a ClearPoint credit counselor can help. ClearPoint is a nonprofit organization and a member of the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. Call us today at 1-800-750-2227 to schedule a free appointment or visit us online at www.repaydebt.org. Get your budget back on track.
And welcome back to School for Startups Radio. Again, thank you so much for being with us today. I have a really interesting guy to introduce you to. I think you're going to be really appreciative of the information we are about to share with you. Please meet Craig Cody. Now, he started off as a New York City police lieutenant, I think, something like that, and served for 17 years, I think, in the New York City Police Department. And Craig, thank you very much for your service. We appreciate you keeping the crime down. But after that, he became a CPA, and he specializes now in tax planning, finding legal ways, remember he was a cop, to reduce our tax liability and keep more of our own money. And of course, we love that. He is a certified tax coach and is one of the authors of an Amazon bestseller called Secrets of a Tax-Free Life, which you can find over on Amazon, of course, and it looks absolutely fascinating. Craig, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Jim, thank you for having me. I'm having a great day, and I'm glad to be on your show.
Well, thanks a lot. I'm excited about your topic. All right. Why'd you leave the police force? At 20 years, don't you get a pension? Wouldn't you, as a CPA, advise me to stay on the force for the full 20 years?
Yes, I probably would advise you of that. Unfortunately, I was injured on the job.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I was forced to leave. So after 17 years, I left. I haven't looked back. This is very interesting. Saving people money is just as interesting as chasing perps down the street.
All right. What's your favorite police TV show?
Oh, I guess it would have to be Blue Bloods.
Okay. I like that one, too. That is a good one. Are they all realistic, or are they all just full of themselves?
They're realistic.
Okay.
They're realistic.
All right. Well, I'm glad for your service, and I'm also glad you got out before 9/11 and didn't have to deal with all of that. And now, I think even more importantly, you're helping all of us save money. Do you view it as your job to fight the IRS? Is that sort of what you, what, how do you view your role in my taxes?
Okay. My role isn't necessarily to fight the IRS. My role is to be proactive and to look for ways where you could legally reduce your tax liability. Just like, you know, Warren Buffett has an army of tax attorneys working on his income to make sure he pays the least amount of taxes. That's what I do for my clients.
All right. I love that. And would you say that, well, let me give you some brutal honesty here, Craig. I have filed my taxes and never once has my CPA come back to me and say, well, what about this? You should think of this. You know, do I have a bad CPA? Am I not being aggressive enough here in my search for a CPA?
Well, I would not say he's a bad CPA. I would just say, you know, he's being... he's not being proactive. He's looking at things after the fact. We like to look at things before the fact. It's kind of like I'll say to somebody, when was the last time your CPA came to you with an idea to save taxes? And I'll usually get the same response that you gave. He hasn't. So we take a proactive approach, and we look for ways where our clients can reduce that liability legally, and then we set things up that way.
And do your clients get audited more frequently then because of that?
No, they do not get more audited because, once again, these are not gray areas. These are just legal things that that we can all do if we took the time to do them.
All right. I think that being an entrepreneur, one of the great reasons about being an entrepreneur and owning a business is that you have a lot of extra tax options available. Is that true or am I misguided?
No, that is very true. There's, you know, good record keeping and structuring your entity choice correctly is a very important aspect that a lot of people don't really do. And then taking the time to actually look at what you're doing and how you can legally do it and reduce your liability.
All right. You said structure my entity choice carefully. I always go LLC. Is that a mistake, or is that, how am I doing?
It might be a mistake. It all Ooh. Depends. And a lot of times what happens is the business owner goes to the attorney. The attorney says, form an LLC, okay? And there's legal reasons why he may want you to form an LLC, okay? But forming an LLC is not always the correct entity choice. It depends on what you're doing, okay? It depends on, if there's change of ownership, expected change of ownership. There's a lot of things that go into that.
All right, well, give me some education on this, Craig. I don't expect to have a change of ownership. I'm going to run this for the next 5-10 years. What should I be thinking about?
Well, you would probably be thinking that maybe that's not the best entity for you, because as a single member LLC, you don't file a separate tax return, in which people typically think that's a good thing because you keep your costs down. But at the same time, every dollar that you make is subject to self-employment tax and the new, what we'll call the Obama tax, which goes up to another 3.9% on everything over about $120,000. Whereas if you were structured as an S corporation and you took reasonable compensation, and maybe in your case reasonable compensation could be $100,000, you might save over 4% on another 100. That could be $4,000 that you get to put in your pocket.
All right, I thought
over 10 years.
Yeah, over 10 years that adds up. I thought that with an LLC, your goal was to have zero profit. You know, in December, you spend a lot of money and get your profit down to zero.
Well, that might work in the beginning, okay, when you're not making as much revenue. But as you grow and you're making more money and you're truly reaping the rewards of being a business owner, okay, and we go into business to make money. So, you can't do something for many years and make no money. Okay, the IRS is going to look at that. That's something that is an audit red flag.
Okay, well, that makes a lot of sense. Is there like a 3-5 rule or something like that in terms of losing money versus making money?
Well, there are rules when it comes to hobbies, et cetera, like that, that it becomes a hobby. But, for what we're talking about real businesses, people that are out there to have a business, make money. We don't want to lose money. I mean, you're going to have to buy a house down the road, or maybe a second home, and you need to go to the bank to borrow money. And if they see you're not making money, you're not going to be able to borrow money.
Yeah, but don't they see through that? Don't they wink back at you? We know you're an entrepreneur and you're trying to reduce your taxes. Wink, wink.
Those days are way over.
Oh, really? Okay?
Yes. The banks are. Sticklers these days, okay, after, I guess, 2007, 2009, when the real estate crash, and those days are over, okay?
All right, let's talk about some of the things in the book, right? I love this idea of secrets of a tax-free life, surprising white write-off strategies most business owners miss. Very, very interesting. Tell us some of these secrets, especially like, assume we have kids and the normal portfolio of things, right? What are some of the strategies we should be looking for?
Let's talk about hiring your kids, okay? Let's say
they're pretty much worthless, Craig. No one would want to hire these kids.
Well, you hire your kids, you make sure they come in, okay? You pay them a reasonable wage, you keep proper documentation, okay? And let's say your child goes to a private high school, okay, and tuition is, $6,000 a year, okay? Now you have that child come in, and he works, and you pay him $500 a month, okay? And it's got to be a reasonable compensation. And then he takes that $500, okay, that now your business gets a tax deduction for, and he uses that to pay his tuition.
How young can I do that for? Because I'm not BSing you now, Craig. We have an Amazon business here, my wife does, and we get stuff sent into the house at wholesale. We repackage it and send it to Amazon, and they sell it for us at retail. Great business. My wife makes some good money off of it. My 4-year-old is our stickering expert. He spends an hour a week stickering for us. Can I hire a four-year-old, or is that like a red flag on top of a dune buggy that's going to attract attention?
It would have to be reasonable compensation for a four-year-old, so you're not going to get a big enough deduction to make it worthwhile, okay? So you could have your four-year-old work for you, but I don't think you're going to get enough of a deduction out of it on your business to make it worthwhile.
All right, and then what about home-based businesses? So this Amazon business is based at home, obviously. Tell me some of the things I need to be thinking about with that.
Oh, there's a whole host of things you can do with a home-based business. You know, number one, you can have a home office, okay? And if you have a home office, then you get to write off a percentage of your utility bills. Obviously, you still get your mortgage and your real estate taxes, but the interesting thing is, depending on where you live, if you're subject to AMT, okay, your real estate taxes are added back for alternative minimum taxes. Now, if you use a home-based business and you have a home office, and let's just say that office takes up 15% of your square foot, now you move 15% of your real estate taxes onto your corporate tax return, okay, or your Schedule C or your LLC, and it is no longer subject to AMT, okay, because that's an add back for alternative minimum tax. Another thing you can do is you can have an on-premise athletic facility, okay, that's available for, you know, your employees, okay, and the employee may just be you, or it could be you and your wife, or your wife and you, okay, and as long as the employees can use that athletic facility, now that is deductible, okay, and we have the code where it says you can do that.
Including a pool?
Including a pool.
No way, because we spend so much money on this damn pool, Craig. Oh my gosh, is it expensive?
Yeah, next to a boat, that is one of the biggest expenses. But yes, an on-premise athletic facility, and it's right in the tax code.
Wow, very cool idea. That's one that even I hadn't thought of yet. So, right.
And once again, it's not a gray area.
Right. Okay. Can I even write off the electricity to run the pool pump?
Yes, you could. But you see, the thing with that is you really can't allocate it because you probably have 1 meter in your home. Okay. So that is hard to allocate.
All right. What if I got like a pool expert to say, you know, our best estimation is that 12% of their power bill is actually pool related. Would something like that help, or is that just silly to the IRS?
If you could document it, okay, then it can work, okay? It has to be reasonable, all right? And all that stuff can be documented. They know how much energy a motor uses.
Yeah, sure. And we run it's fall now, and we don't have a cover. We leave our pool open year-round because we're here in Georgia, and we can't swim year-round, but it's pretty year-round. And so we have to have the cleaner thing clean the bottom of the pool to get all the leaves out, you know, 3 or 4 hours a day. You know, so it adds up, I imagine, pretty quickly. What about medical cost, Craig? What are some of the medical issues that I need to be thinking of in terms of my taxes?
Well, it depends. It really depends on how you're structured. And that's why when we structure an entity, we look at a whole host of different things. Maybe it does make sense to be a single member LLC. Okay. And then there's something called the medical expense reimbursement plan. Okay, where we use a lot with, say, a realtor. If you have kids that are getting braces, you can all of a sudden make those deductible under a medical expense reimbursement plan, which you're able to cover your spouse and your family members. And when we do a tax plan, typically when we sit down with a new client and we make all these decisions, we put together a tax plan, and that tax plan outlines what needs to be done. It also outlines where the tax code is that says you can do this.
All right. Excellent. That's some good information. All right. I'm sitting here thinking I want to hire you, but you're in New York. I'm in Georgia. Or some of our listeners are in California or Texas, wherever. Does that make a difference? Does it make a difference which state your CPA resides in, does business in?
No, it doesn't make a difference as long as he's aware of what the local rules are, okay, as far as the state rules versus the federal rules. But we have clients all over the country, and with the advent of this thing called the Internet and something else called Skype and WebEx, it's just like you're sitting across the table.
All right. Advantages or disadvantages to late filing? I don't think we've actually filed in April in a decade. So we're lazy. I am convicted. Bad or does it matter?
You know, there's a lot of wives' tales out there, and I believe that's another wife's tale. As long as you file your extension by April 15th or March 15th, depending on your deadline, and you file it, you know, you pay your tax due, and you file the actual return by the extended due date, it should not cause you to be audited anymore as you would if you filed it timely.
All right. And other than that, there's no issues? Or is there any extra penalties or anything for filing late?
No, because it's not considered a late filed return as long as you file your extension.
Right.
And you do need to make sure the tax is paid. So it's not an extension of pay the tax. It's just an extension to file the return. So on an individual, you have to make sure you've paid in that tax, okay, by April 15th. And then you do have until October 15th, typically, to file that return.
And Go ahead.
A lot of times, because of brokerage statements and the way they come in late, and sometimes, you know, different entities are not available if you own real estate or partnerships and stuff like that, it's really very hard to file before the original due date, and you need to go on extension.
All right. In the write-up about your book, there's a comment that says it gives you the secrets to the 0% tax bracket. Tell me about that.
Well, the secrets to the 0% tax bracket is doing everything you can and being proactive to take advantage of everything that's out there that allows you to reduce your tax liability. Now, not everybody can be in the 0% tax bracket, okay? But if you're in the 25% tax bracket and we're able to come up with about $50,000 or $60,000 worth of missed or overlooked deductions, you know, you've saved somewhere between, you know, $10,000 and $15,000 a year, okay? And I would say, on average, our clients, when we do a tax plan, save around $15,000 a year, okay? We have some that save a lot more than that. I mean, we did a tax plan for somebody last year. They saved $93,000, okay? And that was year one.
Is there, like, a list of things that you look for? So say I hire you, Craig. Are you just going to sit down and ask me a list of 106 different questions that will hopefully lead to a bunch of deductions? Is that it?
No, a computer could do that. What we're going to do is we're going to ask you some inquisitive questions, find out about your business, look at your tax return. There are some typical ground balls that people miss, all right? And we'll go through them. We'll talk about your parents. Are you supporting your parents? Okay. As a business owner, there is a lot of different things you can do, okay, and do them legally and wind up with a tax deduction.
Do business owners get to deduct business meals? Are they half deductible? What's the deal with business meals and entertainment?
On a federal level, they're 50% deductible, okay? There are some states where you get to deduct the whole thing, but that's only on the state return. But for the most part, the government says, well, if you're out with somebody and you're paying for lunch, well, you're going to eat anyway, so the government should not subsidize you. Okay?
Well, what if I take four people to lunch? I should get an 80% deduction, damn it.
Yeah, that, you know, you're better off taking four different people to four different lunches on the same day.
Awesome. All right. What about if I shoot a bad guy, Craig? Is my bullet deductible?
No, they're not deductible. Okay. And your legal costs are going to be very, very expensive. So hopefully you never have to do that.
What about legal expenses? Legal expenses are 100% deductible if you have a small business, right?
If they're involved in your small business, yes, they are 100% deductible. And we've seen people where, you know, for a number of different reasons, they've had high legal costs and they are deductible.
All right. with some great information. Greg, this looks like a book that I need to read over the holidays coming up here. It looks absolutely fantastic. Again, the title is Secrets of a Tax-Free Life. Greg, how can we find out more about you, follow you on social media, hire you, give me a URL, all that stuff, please?
Okay, well, our website is www.craigcodyandcompany.com. We are on Twitter. It's CraigC2742. And 2742 was my shield number when I was a NYPD sergeant, okay? And we are also on Facebook at Craig Cody and Company.
Fantastic. Craig, thank you for this great advice, and I hope I never need your services in an audit.
That's great, Jim. And one other thing, if you go to our website, you'll see we have a free download, 10 Mistakes of a Business Owner. And if you go to the website, you could download those 10 mistakes and get you started on the right track.
Fantastic. Craig, great information. Thank you so much for this and writing the book. And I hope you'll come back on the show around April 15th and give us some more advice.
Thank you for having me, Jim. You have a great day.
You too. And we will be right back. We're going to be talking with a teacher who has written, actually a principal, who's written a great book on kids' leadership and education mistakes that we're making as a society. It's going to be really interesting. We will be right back.
School for Startups Radio appreciates you listening. Please check out the 5-star rated School for Startups book on Amazon, which argues that anyone can be an entrepreneur when you learn a new way to think about creativity, risk, and passion. Go to schoolforstartups.com to see our online learning center, and you can connect with the host, Jim Beach, on LinkedIn, send him an email at james.beach@att.net, or follow him on Twitter at @entrepreneurjim. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the show.
Having trouble creating or finding great content to tweet or post on LinkedIn or Facebook? The new AHA Amplifier is designed to make it one-click easy. Want to tweet 10 times a day with fresh new thoughts? Find content from some of the greatest thinkers of our time. Go to ahaamplifier.com and sign up for a free account and get 4 free AHA books. By sharing high-quality AHA messages, you'll quickly grow your network while impressing your existing one. Sign up right now at ahaamplifier.com.
Well, I want to thank Sue and Craig for being with me today. Really enjoyed speaking with both of them. Sue really took me to school, didn't she? It's amazing how much I have to learn about all of these social media and how much there is to keep up with, to keep on top of. It seems like it's just an ever-evolving world. And for us entrepreneurs, that is the perpetual challenge to stay up to date. Anyway, thank you so much for being with us today. We appreciate it. We got a great show for you tomorrow, too. We have Rick Martinez, the author of BINK, B-I-N-K. It's an acronym. We will learn what it means tomorrow, and I promise you that you will want to hear this. And then on Thursday, listen to this. We have a guy who spent $650,000 to have lunch with Warren Buffett. That is an amazing story that you will not want to miss. I promise you, you will enjoy that a bunch. And then Friday, we have Steve Strauss, the USA Today small business editor. Great lineup coming up the rest of the week. Thank you so much for being with us, and we'll be back tomorrow with more great School for Startups Radio. Bye now.